The names may have changed, but the hate burns just as bright.
Oh, brother. Someone wake me when this election is over.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair.
Nope, not scared.
And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Clowns and jokers everywhere.
Yes, I'm stuck in the middle.
From Pacifica Radio's KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, this is the broadcast as heard on KPFK here in Los Angeles and up in Oregon on 91.7 FM KYAQ on the Central Coast and 106.7 FM Queso in Cottage Grove. In Lancaster, Pennsylvania on 93 FM WLRI. Out in Hawaii on 88.5 FM KAKU, the voice of Maui. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN 94.1 FM. Up in Palenville, New York on WLPP 102.9 FM. And in Minneapolis, St. Paul on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. And coast to coast and around the globe, streaming on the internet tubes on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Indie Media Weekly, FYI Nation, NicoleSandler.com. We love you, Nicole. Radio Free Brooklyn, GDPR, Revolution 99, Detour Talk, Radio Monterey, and Radio Sputnik, blanketing planet Earth 5 days a week. You can run, and you might like to, but you can't hide from the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow from bradblog.com. Coming up, we will head up to North Dakota. Beautiful North Dakota, I should add. Boy, would I like to go back to North Dakota right around now. Anyway, we will go up to North Dakota where an ongoing and growing protest by Native American tribes is hoping to block the construction of the massive Dakota Access Pipeline from the Bakken Shale region down to the Midwest. This huge pipeline. We will speak to, and this was after the Keystone XL pipeline. I believe Desi Doyen was going to run a similar route from up there.
Similar-ish. It's a big area.
Yeah, well, so. It's a big area, and this is a big
same idea. It's a big pipeline.
Big
it's going to go across waterways to bring oil. Yeah.
Well, we'll see. Unless it's blocked by the Native Americans who are up there now trying to block the ongoing construction. We will speak to the chairman of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe about the occupation protest that is ongoing right now near the Standing Rock Sioux reservation and their what they consider to be sacred lands. The protest is growing. More and more folks are joining those protests. Members of tribes from around the country are joining and heading that way. We'll talk to him about that and about his day in federal court in Washington, D.C. on Wednesday, where the tribe is attempting to get an injunction against the ongoing construction of that pipeline by Texas-based Energy Transport Corporations. After the approval for the permit was granted to the company for the construction of the pipeline, a permit granted by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Yep, it's shaping up as another standoff between Native Americans and federal authorities in the Dakotas. What could possibly go wrong? Also, Hillary Clinton unleashed an offensive today against Donald Trump and what she describes as his white nationalism. We will have some of that in a moment. She has just wrapped up her speech today in Reno, Nevada. As well, recovery efforts following the massive earthquake in central Italy on Wednesday continues. The death toll, we reported on this yesterday, now the death toll is up to about 250, with hundreds more injured and more still missing. So that death count, I'm afraid, is likely to rise. Desi Doyen, you'll be back with us, of course, with the Green News Report a little bit later.
Yep.
On that massive flooding in India that is shockingly just getting so little attention. You offer a reason why that is in today's report. And I guess we should be, of course, there's some more dark news, as usual, in your Green News Report, but there's also some bright news, because we are now celebrating this week. Here's something to celebrate. I knew we'd find something. The 100th anniversary, 100th birthday of the National Park Service.
Yes, that's the folks that make sure that our national parks are still here.
Our national treasures are still here. And, you know, if you haven't visited the national parks, I don't know what the holdup is. Man, I'd be there today if I could. All right, well, let's get to this. So Hillary Clinton, we'll have all of that in a moment. But first, Hillary Clinton went on the offensive, as I said, against Donald Trump today, following Trump, who was sort of trying to preempt this speech that she had been scheduled to make in Reno, Nevada today. Donald Trump yesterday, I think it was, on Wednesday in Mississippi, of all places, called Hillary Clinton a bigot. He called her a bigot who sees people of color only as votes, unquote. And today, in a speech at a rally, Trump's up in New Hampshire, Trump called it, quote, disgusting that she had called him and his supporters racist. Now, she didn't actually call him a racist, as far as I could tell from the parts of the speech that I was able to see before we went on air here today. But she did put out a video earlier, a couple of hours before the Reno speech, in which she called some of his supporters, and in fact, they are proudly racist, actually, members of the Klan, of the Ku Klux Klan, and so forth. So she put out in this video various white supremacist leaders, including a number of Ku Klux Klan leaders, as I said, in their Klan outfits, speaking in support of Donald Trump. And then she moved the focus to Trump's new campaign chief, Steve Bannon of Breitbart News, which is a top website on the now so-called alt-right movement. Hillary Clinton, her Twitter account, tweeted out this video today, along with the text, quote, "There's a reason the most hateful fringe of the right wing is supporting Donald Trump." And here's some of that video.
The reason a lot of Klan members like Donald Trump is because a lot of what he believes, we believe in. Donald Trump would be best for the job.
For president.
Yeah.
I am a farmer and white nationalist. Support Donald Trump.
Sending out all the illegals, building a wall, and a moratorium on Islamic immigration. That's very appealing to a lot of ordinary white people.
Running against Donald Trump at this point is really treason to your heritage.
Will you unequivocally condemn David Duke and say that you don't want his vote or that of other white supremacists?
I don't know anything about white supremacists, so I don't know.
Trump named Steve Bannon as his new campaign CEO. Mr. Bannon is best known for his controversial Breitbart News,
a campaign chair that ran a website that has become a field day for the alt-right, which is racist and all sorts of other ists.
The alt-right, which is a sort of dressed up in suits version of the neo-Nazi and white supremacist movements.
A lot of what he believes, we believe in.
That video, then ends with an ominous photo of the White House and the words, "If Trump wins, they could be running the country." In her speech in Reno today, she eviscerated Trump for, quote, offering a dog whistle to stir up the white nationalist, anti-immigrant, alt-right fringe supporters of his campaign. TPM notes that from the beginning, the GOP nominee had built his campaign on prejudice and paranoia, as Clinton described it, all the while inviting the radical fringe to take over the Republican Party. Clinton took aim at Trump's most hateful supporters, as she called them, members of the so-called alt-right, the loosely organized anti-establishment movement that has proliferated in white nationalist anti-Muslim corners of the internet, while riffing on Trump's recent line, which we've covered here, asking black voters, "What the hell do you have to lose by casting a vote for Donald Trump?" Clinton said that Trump had a lot of gall to ask the communities that he has ignored and mistreated for decades what they have to lose under a Trump presidency. She criticized Trump again for bringing Steve Bannon of Breitbart News on board to lead his campaign, She read some of the headlines that the site has published during Bannon's tenure there at Breitbart News, including posts such as headlines such as "Birth Control Makes Women Unattractive and Crazy."
Nice.
Don't look at me like that, Desi Doyen. I didn't write it. Gabby Giffords, "The Gun Control Movement's Human Shield."
Jeez.
Gabby Giffords, of course, was shot in the head, almost killed, actually reported as dead some years ago. Congresswoman from Arizona giving a rally, I guess, outside a supermarket in Tucson, Arizona. She was not killed. A number of others, I think it was, I want to say 6 or 9 were killed in that incident by one crazy guy with a gun who was able to shoot over and over and over until he tried to change magazines and was actually tackled by an old lady who herself almost was shot by somebody coming out with a gun from the supermarket after hearing the commotion and trying to do something about it, almost killed the old lady who had taken down the shooter. In any case, I digress. Clinton also reminded the crowd that Trump has frequently engaged in some of the alt-right's favorite conspiracy theories, charging that he, quotes, "traffics in dark conspiracy theories drawn from the pages of supermarket tabloids in the far dark reaches of the internet."
It's like nothing we've heard before from a nominee for president of the United States from one of our two major parties. From the start, Donald Trump has built his campaign on prejudice and paranoia. He is taking hate groups mainstream and helping a radical fringe take over the Republican Party. So no one should have any illusions about what's really going on here. The names may have changed. Racists now call themselves racialists. White supremacists now call themselves white nationalists. The paranoid fringe now calls itself alt-right. But the hate burns just as bright. And now Trump is trying to rebrand himself as well. But don't be fooled. There's an old Mexican proverb that says, "Tell me with whom you walk, and I will tell you who you are." But we know who Trump is. A few words on a teleprompter won't change that. He says he wants to make America great again, but more and more it seems as though his real message seems to be make America hate again. We wouldn't tolerate this kind of behavior before, and we wouldn't tolerate in our homes, and we should not stand for it from a presidential candidate.
That was Hillary Clinton speaking in Reno, Nevada today. After the speech, Trump came out swinging, of course, as you might expect, on Twitter, accusing Hillary Clinton of, quote, "pandering to the worst instincts in our society" and accusing her of race baiting. He later went onto CNN and called her a bigot over and over and over again. I guess it's the old I'm rubber and you're glue defense from Donald Trump. So that's what's going on in the American presidential campaign here, just about 75 days out from the election.
That's what gets me. We still have 75 or so days to go.
Yep.
Where is this going to go from here? It seems like he's already got himself over the top. So
you
apparently
think?
There's a little bit you more
think?
To go.
We will see where it goes in the next 75 days. I think they could be 75 long days, but we will see. I suspect we'll have more on that speech, Trump's reaction to it. And it was something we haven't even covered at all is really over the past few days that has happened this week. Trump has completely flip-flopped over his central, his trademark campaign theme of deporting illegal immigrants from the country. He's completely flip-flopped on that and has reversed pretty much to the policies of, Marco Rubio and Jeb Bush, the guys who he had criticized for their immigration proposals. That's what Trump is now doing. It has made Ann Coulter absolutely crazy. I realize that's not a long drive for Ann Coulter. She actually put out a book called In Trump We Trust yesterday, and on that same day, he all but abandoned his immigration policy, his deportation policy. Anyway, I suspect we'll cover that, whether we like it or not, in the days ahead. Until then, let's take a quick break here, and we will come back with this this enormous $3.7 billion pipeline set to run nearly 1,200 miles from the North Dakota Bakken Shale region down to refineries in southern Illinois, unless the Native American tribes in the Dakotas can stop that from happening. We will be speaking to the chairman of the tribe taking the lead there next on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't go away. Welcome back. This is The Bradcast. I'm Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Why did the Keystone XL pipeline not get built? Asks environmental champion and 350.org founder Bill McKibben at grist.org this week. Above all, he writes, because indigenous peoples on both sides of the border took the lead in a battle that stretched over a decade. Why did Canadian leaders fail in their efforts to replace it with the Northern Gateway Pipeline? Because tribes and bands across the west of that country made it clear they could not be bought off by the billions offered to them by the oil and pipeline companies. Why will the easiest to access deep water port on the Pacific coast not be turned into the country's biggest new coal export terminal? Because the Lummi Nation at Cherry Point joined with protesters across the region to say no. This same dynamic, he writes, is at play around the world, where indigenous peoples from the Amazon to the coral atolls of the Pacific are doing more than anyone else to slow down the grinding destruction of our Earth. This week, McKibben says, the center of the fight for our planet's future has shifted to Standing Rock Sioux Reservation, straddling the border between North Dakota and South Dakota. There, he explains, tribal members have been, well, standing like a rock in the way of the planned Dakota Access Pipeline, a huge hose for collecting oil out of the Bakken Shale and carrying it off to the Midwest and the Gulf where it can be made into gasoline. The standoff has been picturesque and dramatic, featuring American Indians on horseback, but mostly it's been brave and lonely, far from most journalists and up against the same forces that have made life hard for indigenous peoples for centuries. The U.S. Army, for instance, it's the Army Corps of Engineers, he says, that last month granted Energy Transfer Corporation the permit necessary to start construction near the reservation, despite a petition signed by 150,000 people and carried on foot by young people from the reservation all the way to Washington. The enormous $3.7 billion pipeline, about the same width as the rejected Keystone Pipeline, is currently set to wind nearly 1,200 miles from North Dakota down to refineries in southern Illinois. Earlier this week, Mike Nowatzki of the Forum News Service in the Bismarck Tribune reported that North Dakota's Homeland Security Director has now ordered the removal of state-owned trailers and water tanks from the Dakota Access Pipeline protest campsite, or prayer camp, as the tribes have now described it, near tribal lands at the confluence of the Missouri and Cannonball Rivers in North Dakota, where temperatures are reaching into the 90s. Tribal members, he reports, from across the nation are beginning to stream in to the campsite, growing in population from between 500 or so, according to law enforcement, to some 4,000, according to tribal spokesmen earlier this week. All in what could be a protracted effort to stop the next major American oil pipeline from being built at all. This week, the tribes were in court in Washington, D.C., asking for an injunction to stop the construction. Today, I'm honored to be joined by David Archambault II, chairman of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, just back from that hearing in D.C. this week. Mr. Archambault, welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you, Brad. It's an honor to be on your show.
Thank you. The honor is mine. I want to get into what is going on at the protest site, but first I want to make sure that I understand the issue in question here. The Dakota Access Pipeline, at least as I understand it, has been rooted around tribal reservation lands. So if so, what is the exact complaint and or the concern of your tribe concerning the construction of this new pipeline?
So the Dakota Access Pipeline is from an energy transport partner.
Mm-hmm.
Energy transport partner is a Dallas-based corporation. This Dallas-based corporation is coming into North Dakota with plans to build pipeline. Now, what our complaint is we have ancestral grounds, ancestral lands, we have treaty lands, and we have the current day reservation that we live on. Our treaty lands, we have a treaty in 1851, is where this pipeline is going to cut through. We know there are sacred sites there. We know that there are things that we cherish. And we were never given an opportunity up front to have the pipeline avoid those things. There were two routes that were chosen.
Mm-hmm.
One was to avoid our ancestral lands, our treaty lands, and go north of Bismarck. Bismarck, North Dakota, the state capital of Bismarck.
Mm-hmm.
And that route was not chosen because someone from the city said we have fresh drinking water. When they chose our route, we raise the same concerns. We need fresh drinking water. We have water intakes. They tell us, there's a very little chance that this would ever be breached.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, why don't you put it north of Bismarck then? Mm-hmm. All because there's a population of people there, and if it does breach, then there's a greater impact. And the thing that bothers us is that it doesn't matter of the size or the significance of the impact. There still will be an impact. Anything that's man-made will have an impact. So what we look at are not only our ancestral sites, but we're looking at the future generations.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be impacting our drinking water today or tomorrow, mm-hmm. if it does go through, but we have to look after the kids that are not even here yet.
Mm.
So what we're really doing is we're talking for our ancestors who are no longer here and can't speak, and we're talking for those children who are not even born yet from our nation. So we have there's a serious issue here with these Dallas-based corporations that are driven by greed and money to get a project done at all costs. And the cost that has to be paid is a burden placed on tribes. And it's not just here, it's across the Indian country. That's why you see this unity coming together. You see tribes everywhere saying, you know, we are still here. Please don't ignore us anymore. When I say anymore, it goes back to the 1851 treaty. That land was a contract entered into by the federal government with the tribal nation, that before the ink was even dry, that treaty was broken. We entered into another treaty, the 1868 treaty, and that treaty is broken. We never were afforded the protection that this Dallas-based corporation is afforded to come through the lands and tear them up, put 30-inch pipe in. And we all see what happens. There's a 50,000 barrel leak in the Yellowstone that feeds into. There's benzene that got into the drinking water. The city of Glendive wasn't able to utilize or drink their water because the levels of benzene was too high. So there's the environmental concerns, our future generation, our ancestral burial sites. You ask what the issue is.
Mm-hmm.
There's too many.
Yeah.
To list.
Yeah.
This is the biggest problem that tribes across this nation have, is anytime there's an endeavor that this nation wants to pursue in interest of this nation's economy, or interest of energy independence, or interest of national security, they'll do a project, but the ones that pay the cost for this benefit are tribal nations. I could give you an example of the 1944 Flood Control Act for the Missouri River. Mm-hmm. There were seven dams built, and if you looked at those seven dams, and if you looked at the land that was inundated with floodwaters, you'll identify a reservation. Mm. We pay that cost, and we continue to pay that cost, so hydropower is created for this nation. Our most sacred place in the Black Hills, in the Dakotas, was the Black Hills. There was gold discovered in there. Because of that gold and the interest of this nation, our treaty was broken, and we were separated and put into current-day reservations. Our reservations lands were allocated to individual members, and whatever was left over was given. So we were never afforded the rights that this Dallas-based company gets to destroy Mother Earth, and it's disturbing to us. So I know in our injunction, we're specific to ancestral burial sites in our argument, but it goes way above and beyond that, and now we're starting to see other issues surface.
And what does the did I understand you right that there was two different options for the route, and in both cases they said, well, if the pipeline is breached, it could affect the drinking water, but it will affect more drinking water if it is at Bismarck rather than less drinking the drinking water of fewer people at the tribal area. Is that basically what they said to you?
Yeah, because there's a concentrated number of people located mm-hmm. in Bismarck, let's say 160,000 people.
Yeah.
If there's a breach, their drinking water would be affected. Because there's only 8,000 people that live on my nation, they said it's a less impact. But what they don't take into consideration are all the communities and all the people who are downstream, the millions of people downstream from us. Mm-hmm. They're only looking at a site.
Right, the local site there, as opposed to the poison that continues downstream. Now, that your tribe has filed for an injunction, as you noted, to block, as I understand it, to block construction of the pipeline. You were at the hearing in federal court in Washington, D.C. on Wednesday. What specifically does the injunction seek at this time? Are you hoping to shut down the entire pipeline, or just simply have it rerouted around your tribal lands?
Right now, we're asking that they just stop construction and give us an opportunity to demonstrate and show where there are sacred sites. Mm-hmm. And if there's a sacred site identified, located, then let's discuss how to do. And that may mean reroute, or may mean mm-hmm. do not construct anymore. There are all the legal options that we need to look at are yet to come, mm-hmm. but we're just asking, don't do any more construction. Right now, what they said, they already scraped the land on majority of the project. So we've been asking them not to go this way. Ever since we learned about this, we said, stop, don't come here. It's a half mile away from our reservation. And they it seems like the company out of Dallas,
yeah,
and the Corps of Engineers, the federal government does not listen. And right now what's happening is tribes are helping people remember that we are here and we still exist and we are a strong voice, and to take notice. And if anything, we set a precedence now for additional pipelines that may come, or additional projects that mm-hmm. are in the best interest of this nation for economic development, or for national security, or for energy independence, to take a closer look and consult with the tribes in that area. We never had that opportunity. We never get that opportunity. They'll say that there was a public commission hearing. Well, we're a nation. We're a sovereign nation. We're not a stakeholder or a citizen of the state to look for these public notices and newspapers. As a government-to-government relationship, these public notices should have been brought to us, and we should have sat down and deliberated on the issues and the facts and the routes.
So is
but
it?
We were never afforded that.
So neither the state of North Dakota in this case, nor the federal government, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, ever came to you as chairman of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe there, and the other tribes in the area to say, okay, what are your concerns about this pipeline? They just the process completely took place around you guys.
So it is not. Well, the state never came, mm-hmm. but with the Corps of Engineers, it's not until the final draft and the final plans are made, then they approach us. Mm. And that's not government-to-government relationship. Mm. We would ask that before a project scoping takes place, and if they're considering looking at an area that is on our ancestral lands or on our treaty lands or near our reservation or on our reservation, that they sit down and consult with us so we can explain to them what the significance is of that land and what is there that we cherish. And potentially that would help them make a decision to route away from that. We're not opposed to energy independence. We're not opposed to national security. We're not opposed to economic development. What we're opposed to is being ignored and having to pay for it and having our kids that are not even here yet pay for that.
Well,
the cost is too much.
It seems they are no longer ignoring you. In the New York Times on Thursday, you wrote an op-ed, Dave Archambault, in which you write that, quote, in recent weeks, the state of North Dakota has militarized my reservation. What does that mean? I know that thousands are streaming in from around the country to support this protest, but they are militarizing your reservation? What's going on out there?
You know, when you have large masses of people coming for a cause, there will be demonstrations or demonstrators who do this all the time. Mm-hmm. And when they come, some of the behavior is not the norm. So because of the masses and because of social media and because of things that are not true, statements that are not true on social media, before the government, state government, validates any information, they will make a hasty decision. By militarizing it, they say, we're going to put a roadblock up. Just south of Fort Lincoln, Custer's home, mm-hmm. And that's like 25 miles north of the site. So what it causes a hardship on the people who live down here, and they'll say it's for safety reasons, so nobody gets hurt on the highway, because the demonstration does take place on the highway, and there are people that are walking, but never has anybody been in danger. There are signs and there are notifications, and people are aware of what's going on, so they come through and they travel slow with caution because of what's taking place. But for some reason, the state government wants to put a blockade nowhere near us, miles and miles away from where the site is taken, and it creates a hardship because vehicles cannot come down. So I flew home last night. Mm-hmm. I flew home I got into the airport at midnight. And normally it takes me 45 minutes from the airport to get to my home in Cannonball, just south of where there's a large camp. It took me an hour and a half to get home because I was rerouted. And I don't think there's any need for that. And the other part of it is they have low-flying aircrafts, nonstop, circling and observing or watching, and it irritates anybody that's in the area. So what is this plane? And it just goes in circles, mm-hmm. circles around the camp. Then they call a state of emergency. The governor calls a state of emergency.
When
this thing first started, the state deployed some emergency equipment, emergency vans, for us to use, because mm-hmm. we knew there were a lot of people coming. They had the equipment down there. They declared a state of emergency, and a few days later, they take their equipment out. So they leave us without anything. So that's fine. We can manage on our own. but it just doesn't make sense, and it's just not right.
And this,
and it's making us feel like, what did we do wrong? We're trying to let the world know there's a wrong going on, but yet it makes it look like we are doing something wrong.
As I understand, North Dakota's Homeland Security Director has ordered the removal of state-owned trailers and water tanks from the Dakota Access Pipeline protest campsite earlier this week, citing mounting reports of unlawful activity, according to the Bismarck Tribune. So what has the removal of those services? This is drinking water. I know that, well, thanks in no small part to global warming, it's getting hotter and hotter out there this week, where the protesters are camped out. How many people do you estimate are now at that campsite, and are people able to get access to drinking water and other services that they might need out at the protest site?
There's a lot of support. The number of campers, number of people varies. I know we would probably be over 1,000 right now, and it can go up and it can go down. People come and they go just to show support. We had over 120 tribal nations submit letters of support or resolutions saying they're behind us on this effort. So there are a lot of people, and as far as the resources go, we are maintaining. We brought our own. We brought a horse trailer that has supplies in there to replace the emergency service needs. We brought a horse trailer in that we put our supplies in. We brought a 300-gallon tank, and if we have to go and get that filled more often, then we'll get more water. You know, and then there's the support from other nations where they bring all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, they bring perishable food, non-perishable food, meat, and so the camp kind of took a life of its own, where we have services to meet the needs, the smallest needs that, if there are any. We're okay. If the state wanted to remove those, that's fine. But it's just a sense that they're doing it to try to squeeze us out. And that's what makes it uncomfortable.
And that's what I'm concerned about. I know that on last Friday, I believe it was, as you mentioned, North Dakota Governor Jack Dalrymple issued an emergency declaration to make additional state resources available. But he has now called, apparently, for federal officials to help manage the situation. Do you have any idea what that actually means? Have you seen any evidence of federal officials? I believe the land is considered to be owned by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, but I don't think the Army Corps itself has any, abilities to manage people like this. What does this mean, asking for federal officials to manage the situation? Have you seen any sign of that yet?
I haven't seen anything as far as federal officials stepping in. And the situation was, we had a camp.
Mm-hmm.
Original camp, and it was in a location where we ran out of room. So knowing that more and more people were saying they were coming,
mm-hmm.
we had to make space available close by. And so we occupied, because we call it an overflow. And anytime there's an emergency, what the tribe was trying to do is just accommodate for the masses.
Mm-hmm.
And we needed to find a space that would be available, and to that would make the most sense, common sense. This is a nice flat area. It's along the Cannonball River. It's on core land. It's not a private owner land. Landowner doesn't own it.
Mm-hmm.
And campers camp on core land all the time. Because it happened so quick, we said we'll make the space available, and in the process we'll have a permit. We'll be working on getting the permit for it. So that's what we have been doing. We're working on this. I actually have a call here to the Corps in regards to this permit.
I'm speaking with Dave Archambault II, the chairman of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. I have seen photos, I believe, of you, Dave, with President Obama in years past. Have you been able to make any appeal to the president, to the White House, concerning this matter? Have you heard anything back from the White House in regard to these concerns you've had?
We drafted letters and we sent them in. We let the staff know that we're reaching out to him, asking for his assistance. We ask for our congressional representatives for assistance, but I don't think it's like the president really hasn't responded.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure if he's aware of the magnitude of this issue. The delegates from our state, they are in support of the pipeline because of the economic development.
Mm-hmm.
But I just try to explain to them that it can be done. If I was them, I would avoid water. Water's too precious, especially in the time when there's a shortage of water worldwide. And you can still achieve their goals if it's economic development, energy independence, whatever their goal is, it can still be achieved if it's thought out and if we had some input in this thought.
There were a number of arrests last week, Mr. Chairman, including, I believe, you as tribal chairman. What were those arrests for? Have all the protesters since been released? And what happened that led to those arrests?
Yeah, I've been arrested, but the Dakota Access Company had filed a suit on me. So until we go through a hearing, I'm not going to talk about that issue right now.
Fair enough. But everyone is okay. The protesters who were arrested, the campers, are no longer being held at this point?
Not that I know of.
Okay. And do you expect more folks, more tribes? I think I saw a report. There was some a dozen or 20 different people from some 20 different tribes now there. Are you expecting more to come? And how long will you guys be camping out there? Is this for the long haul until you get a decision from the federal courts on this?
There's no timeline.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about timelines. We're just looking at how can we build awareness of the unjust acts that are being done to Indian country. And this is one battle.
Mm-hmm.
There will be many battles. But the way we're approaching this is a peaceful battle. We are doing it in a good way with unity and prayer and not with combat or violence. And with unity and prayer, that is sends a really strong message across the nation, across other countries, across the world, that prayer is powerful. And our prayers are being answered with the support that shows up. So I can't give you a timeline of mm-hmm. how long we're going to be there or what's going to happen or what we're going to do. I just know that we're going to continue to be united, and we're going to continue to pray. And this is going to be a pathway on how to address other issues or concerns that may be present with our tribes or with our people.
When do we expect a decision from the D.C. court at this time concerning your injunction to stop the construction of the pipeline there?
The judge. We were anticipating three results yesterday. One was to rule in our favor. That would have been the most favorable. The second would have been to rule in the defendant's favor. That wouldn't have helped us.
Right.
I wouldn't have been. That would have been the least favorable. But the second best thing was to delay his ruling. And his ruling is set for September 9th, with 5 days after that for an appeal for either party. And to me, it just helped when a judge doesn't make a decision without thoroughly going through the facts
mm-hmm.
and taking a look at what's going on here. It also gives us opportunity to express, continue to express what is bothersome to us, what are our concerns, and we can let the world know that this is going on, and get the support behind us where it's needed to take a look at this Dallas-based company,
yeah,
who is ramrodding through Indian country a pipeline that would be devastating not only to our ancestors but to our future generations.
Has the construction, while you're waiting for this decision, then the construction has at least temporarily been halted until you hear back from the courts?
I'm not sure. Right now at the site, at the Wahi site, we are not seeing construction, but that doesn't mean that the company ceased construction. They this is an 1,160-mile pipeline, 30-inch diameter. Carrying 550 barrels of crude oil with benzene to loosen it up. And this is going in, they're doing construction all along this. So I can't tell you whether or not they stopped construction because I'm monitoring every mile.
But in the area, in other words, in the area of the protest, I know that they had been actually, you know, building there. Has that been stopped nearby the protest campsite?
Today, there's no construction.
Okay, but it could start at any time, it sounds like. Dave Archambault, where can people get more info about what is going on down there, and how can they help? How can the rest of the nation, the rest of the world, actually help support your fight?
I would say that if you want to be helpful and support, write to your Congress, write to your representatives, ask them to take a look at this and stop this pipeline from going in right here, so close to our nation and within our treaty lands. Send a message to them. The more people that do that, the better. You can go on the Standing Rock Sioux Tribal Facebook page is where we're putting a lot of information out on that, because social media is a medium that is used in today's world. So we also have a website, standingrock.org, but a lot of the stuff, information we get, the letters of support, we try to post on our Facebook page.
Very good. We'll point folks to both that Facebook page and standingrock.org. David Archambault, the second chairman of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, good luck with the fight. Thank you for that fight, and I hope you'll not mind if we check back in with you in the days ahead as this as the fight continues, because I suspect it could be going on for quite a while, Dave.
Okay.
Thank you very much. You bet. Thank you very much. All right, a quick break, and we're back with the Green News Report and a bit more. I'm Brad Friedman. This is your Bradcast. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Desi Doyen, we'll get to our Green News report in a moment, but your thoughts on David Archambault's and actually on the entire fight, the protest up there in the Dakotas.
Well, I think that one of the things that he mentioned and we didn't really get to delve into with him was the fact that pipelines spill. Mm-hmm. All pipelines spill. Yeah. They always have, and they always will. And so when he's referring to, I think he mentioned at one point the Yellowstone River pipeline spill, that was back in 2011. There's actually been two pipeline spills on the Yellowstone River, one just back in last January in 2015. And those put an oil slick over 40 miles downstream from the pipeline spill itself. There was also another pipeline spill in Kalamazoo, Michigan. That one went 70 miles downstream.
Down the Kalamazoo River, and they're still fighting to clean that up because
exactly.
It was that thick
tar sands, bitumen
oil. Yeah.
Yes. So, you know, this is something that is not a non-trivial issue for them, and I found it just kind of horrific that the Army Corps of Engineers would think, oh, well, there are fewer people here who would lose their drinking water if this spills, so we're going to make them the sacrifice zone.
Yep. The sacrifice zone. Indeed, Bill McKibben's article that I quoted from at the top of that segment, the headline there was, after 525 years, it's time to actually listen to Native Americans. I think I agree with Bill McKibben there. And,
absolutely.
And by the way, I agree with him enough that I will listen to you sometime. We'll have to talk on this show about your very important Native American heritage, but not today, because we got to get to it. Our latest Green News Report.
Absolutely catastrophic flooding going on in eastern and central India.
More than 300 dead, millions displaced by flooding in India.
As of today, federal support has reached $127 million.
President Obama pledges Louisiana flood victims will not be forgotten. Very bad news for wolves in Washington state. Plus,
as FDR once said, there is nothing so American as our national parks.
Celebrating the 100th birthday of the National Park Service.
Happy there's something to celebrate this week. All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
What I want the people of Louisiana to know is that you're not alone on this, even after the TV cameras leave.
Wait, have the TV cameras got there? This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, a very rough week for planet Earth. Remarkable disasters, not the least of which is the Italy earthquake going on all across the globe.
Yes, indeed. Let's start in Louisiana, where President Obama this week promised victims of the deadly historic flood disaster that killed 13 people in Baton Rouge that they would not be forgotten, pledging the federal government's commitment to the years-long process of recovery.
Once the floodwaters pass, people's attention spans pass. This is not a one-off. This is not a photo op issue. This is how do you make sure that a month from now, 3 months from now, 6 months from now, people still are getting the help that they need.
In his remarks, the president didn't mention climate change, which has been credited with intensifying the floods in Louisiana. And after he spoke in Baton Rouge, down in New Orleans, four protesters were arrested for trying to stop the Interior Department's Bureau of Ocean Energy Management from auctioning off leases for oil and gas exploration in the Gulf of Mexico.
Just to make matters worse.
In central India, floods from heavy monsoon rains have submerged entire villages, killing at least 300 people and displacing more than 6 million, with thousands in relief camps. The devastation hasn't attracted much attention from the international media. The CEO of charity group Save the Children says that India's floods are, quote, seen as a chronic problem, so they often no longer attract adequate attention from either the media or donors that is necessary for emergency relief and long-term solutions.
More than 300 are dead, millions are dislocated, and they're having trouble getting the media to even pay attention.
Meanwhile, a new study concludes that natural disasters linked to climate change, like floods and droughts, are, quote, a threat multiplier that increases the risk of armed conflicts. The Potsdam Institute for Climate Research found that in the last half century, 23% of violent clashes in ethnically divided regions were preceded by environmental disasters. They said it, quote, played a prominent and almost ubiquitous role, specifically in areas that were already seeing deep cultural divisions.
Well, that's not good news for India.
Nope, it certainly isn't.
And it's not good for the U.S. Republicans love to talk about national security, and once again, we have more evidence that climate change, which they think is a hoax, makes national security that much harder here in the U.S.
In Montana, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has shut down 183 miles of the Yellowstone River to stop the spread of a parasite that has killed thousands of fish. The parasite is thriving thanks to conditions created by extended drought and record warm river temperatures. The parasite poses no danger to humans, but humans are responsible for its spread. Bad news for wolves in Washington state, where the State Department of Fish Fish and Wildlife has approved a plan to kill 11 wolves, comprising all of the remaining members of a single wolf pack. Ranchers and officials say the pack has killed at least 15 cattle since early July that were grazing on public lands. The Center for Biological Diversity criticized the extermination plan in a statement saying, quote, "We don't support the killing of the public's wildlife on public lands." Finally, speaking of public lands, Thursday marked the 100th birthday of the National Park Service. Not the parks, but the agency that manages them. Attendance is booming at the parks, but budget cuts forced by Congress have created a $12 billion backlog in maintenance. Last month, the Park Service proposed a controversial solution recognizing major donors with limited naming rights on some park items, similar to how museums recognize donors to raise funds. In honor of the National Park Service centennial, President Obama this week created the nation's newest national monument in Maine, the Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument. That's the first step toward what is likely to be the last new national park ever for the Northeast.
Here's an idea. What if we take those 11 wolves from Washington State and let them loose inside the U.S. Congress? Just an idea. For much more on all of those stories, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. Okay, I guess I have to say I didn't really mean I want to unleash 11 endangered wolves into the U.S. Congress.
Okay.
Although I'd kind of like to. That would be kind of fun. We didn't have time to note there, but there's only 19 confirmed gray wolf packs in all of Washington State. That makes only 90 wolves, according to the latest census from the Department of Fish and Wildlife. So you're talking, Desi Doyen, about 12% of the confirmed state population is going to be killed in this. Democratic State Senator Kevin Ranker had said he was originally told they were going to kill only half of the pack and see if the killings of the cows stopped. But then he was removed that, no, we're going to kill all of them. So that he's very upset. They haven't implemented their first plan. They're just going straight to plan B.
Yes, and there is some question whether the rancher is being responsible with where he's putting his animals. But the Wolf Advisory Council agreed with the decision, so we'll have to see if that works. Just two other things. That national monument, the new national monument that we have in Maine, really interesting story about how the founder, co-founder of Burt's Bees has been trying to give this land away. You'll find that linked on
trying to give the land away to the federal government, right?
Right.
For the park.
Right. And you'll find that full story. It's really interesting on our website at greennews.bradblog.com. And also that oil and gas lease sale for the Gulf of Mexico kind of turned out to be a dud. The federal government offered 24 million acres, only sold leases for 183,000 acres, probably because of the glut in oil prices means that, hey, maybe oil industry is not as interested now.
Oh, sad trombone. My thanks to our guest, David Archambault of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. Get more information about what's going on up there at standingrock.org. To our producer, Desi Doyen, and of course to you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. It is, as ever, greatly appreciated. You can drop me an email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And you can find and follow me and say nice things or not nice things about me and to me on the Twitters and the Facebooks at The Brad Blog. That is it. Until we meet again, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.